Now you have a member of the club on the traffic coming out of the car park on Sunday. Oh, sorry, this was too late. Now you have a member of the club on. The traffic coming out of the car park on Sunday after the Dunloe game was madness, and nobody there directing traffic on a busy day at the pitch. Surely someone should be out directing traffic. I think the money from the budget, says a listener, should be kept for the pension tsunami that's coming. A recession is coming. We need a safeguard, saving budget, not a giveaway budget. I'm not sure about the risk of a recession, because even in Britain and America, where there was very much a fear of recession, it seems to have been offset somewhat. And we are an open economy, of course, so what happens elsewhere can affect us. I'm not sure there's a risk of a recession. There'll always be a recession coming. But I agree with you, there is a pension tsunami coming. And many people now listening in their 20s, 30s and 40s, they really need to start putting stuff away if they can, because they're not going to have very much to live on, potentially, when they reach an age to stop working. This caller says, though, we need to protect private pensions. People will be left with nothing again. Another caller says, there's no tax on alcohol this year. There hasn't been an annual budget increase on alcohol in 10 to 20 years. Alcohol has gone up every year, so it's the vintners that are putting up the prices themselves. Or certainly, I think, from what I see, it is the major suppliers of the alcohol that seem to be putting the prices up, and vintners can't absorb that. They have to pass it on as well. In Northern Ireland, if working on the roads, if replacing water mains of anything like this, you have to leave the road every evening capable of letting a car use the road at night time. You have to use temporary tar and next morning start where you left off the evening before. You do not leave traffic lights and no emergency service lane. You fill in the track and put temporary tar on the track until the next morning. Now, the roadworks that we've been talking about there, at Barnesmore, the entry to Barnesmore there, effectively the more significant the waterworks. You know, it's not just a strip going up one side, it's effectively the whole side of the road. But we have to have something there for emergency vehicles, if there isn't. Greg, the modular homes seem to be turning into a mini children's hospital situation with the price away sky high. I don't think any of them have actually ever been delivered yet. We seem to have no control over costs in this country at all. It is just accepting that everything goes over budget. I wonder how much money the OPW has squandered over the years on all the various projects that they are involved in all over the country. Well, it was the Controller and Auditor General that spotted these increases, but because apparently there was a big panic on, even though, as you say, not many of these houses have been provided, checks and balances that should have been done, it seems, according to reports, weren't done. Refull names being used for staff at the hospital. I think it is a great idea, says a listener. I had an incident recently where I was met with a very rude nurse. When I finished my business on the ward, I thought, no, that behaviour was unwarranted and unnecessary. So I asked another member of staff for her name. She was very reluctant to give it to me. If they are wearing their full identity, it might make them think twice about their behaviour. Interesting. I'm starting to see something of a divergence in views between, you know, staff. I've had no contact from staff personally, but I've seen reports of staff opinions and unions' opinions. And the public so far in what they're saying to us seem to be in favour of the badges. Hi, Greg. Who voted for the 15% property tax? Probably Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. They should be named. Well, we'll get a breakdown of that. It kind of normally goes along the same lines every time it comes up. So we'll try and find that out for you. And lastly, just before we take a break, hi Greg, keep saying it until I'm blue in the face. A cost management team or individual needs to be put in place in every section of the public service. This can consist of an accountant, up to a team inclusive of quantity surveyors, legal heads, etc. Yesterday, the 15% LPT increase has been kept, yet the roads are still in an atrocious condition from last increase. Rates untouched. Shall the junkets remain? Asks Oshin. The property tax is not used for roads, though. I mean, if you're from Derry, your tax that you pay there, the similar tax, you know, you might have access to your bin collection, local leisure centres, that type of thing. Here, it's not really for that. The last time I was told, what it's used is often for match funding for investment in projects such as improvements at Slieve League or a visitor centre in Malinhead or wherever it might be, that money is often used as match funding to source national money. It's not necessarily for services. Now, if I'm wrong there, if that's changed, please feel free to contact me and correct me.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91260025.
Now, it's just about to turn 20 past 10 on this Tuesday, the 1st of October, and it's time for the latest episode of Community Garda Information. And welcome back into studio, Garda Sergeant Charlene Anderson from Buncrana Garda Station. Charlene, thanks so much for calling up.
Good morning, Dan. Greg,
is it up or down for you?
Down.
Down, okay. Okay, we've a lot to get through, and we'll kick off maybe with appeals, as we always do. And an assault at High Road in Letterkenny being investigated.
That's correct, Greg. So this morning, Garda, you're appealing for information in relation to a suspected assault that occurred on the High Road in Letterkenny in the early hours of Wednesday, the 25th of September, between approximately 3.30 and 3.40 a.m. Now, Garda, you were alerted to the fact that a man was injured on the High Road somewhere near the County Museum, and an ambulance was called. Now, this gentleman was taken to Letterkenny University Hospital to receive treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. So we're appealing for anyone who may have been in the area, who may have witnessed the assault, to make contact with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167100. Or indeed, if anyone was in the area and may have dash cam footage, we just ask them to make that footage available to us.
And there's a second appeal for an assault as well, this time in Buncrana.
That's correct. So Gardaí in Buncrana, they're also investigating an assault that occurred at the railway road in Buncrana at approximately 10:45 p.m. on Saturday, the 28th of September. Now, Gardaí were alerted that an altercation of some description had taken place at railway road. They then discovered an injured man in the area on arrival. So an ambulance was called and the man was also taken to hospital to receive medical treatment for injuries sustained during the assault. Now, just once again, if anyone witnessed the incident, we'd ask them to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 9320540, or if anyone has dash cam footage, they may have been in the area between, say, 10:30 and 11 p.m, we just ask them to make that available to us, Greg.
Now, criminal damage being investigated in Carndonagh.
So there's a number of criminal damage appeals this morning. The first one relates to a criminal damage incident that occurred at the Diamond in Carndonagh. And between Tuesday the 24th of September at 6 p.m. and Wednesday the 25th of September at 9 a.m. Now, during that time, Greg, a rear window of a business premises was smashed, but no entry was gained to the building. So we'd appeal to anyone who may have observed any suspicious activity in the area between those times to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 9320540.
A second incident in Carndonagh.
And the second incident, that's correct, Greg, that occurred at Benduff, Carndonagh, between Friday the 20th of September at 10 p.m. and Saturday the 21st of September at 9 a.m. Now, damage was caused to six windows at a house in the area between those times, but no entry was gained to the property. So once again, our appeal is for anyone who may have observed any suspicious activity or indeed vehicles in that area between those times.
All right, criminal damage investigation ongoing now in Mofill.
Yes, Greg, this incident occurred in the area of Glenegivney, Mofill, between 6 p.m. on Wednesday the 25th of September and 6 p.m. on Thursday the 26th of September. Now, what we know is the 12 silage bales were stacked along the roadside in the area and the wrapping on them was slashed somewhere between those times. So if anyone once again observed any suspicious activity in the area of Glenegivney, Mofill, again, between the 25th of September at 6 p.m. and Thursday the 26th of September at 6 p.m, we'd ask them to contact Gardaí in Buncrana.
I mean, none of this makes any sense, but that's particularly completely and utterly pointless.
Absolutely.
Investigations ongoing and being renewed, I suppose, by way of an appeal in relation to burglaries down in Mount Charles.
That's correct, Greg. So we previously issued an appeal in relation to two burglaries that occurred in the area of Drumconnor and Mount Charles in the early hours of Monday the 12th of August. Now, there was two business premises in question. It was a garage and a car breaker's yard. They were located in close proximity to one another. And a large amount of Snap-on and Milwaukee hand and power tools and high-end diagnostic equipment was stolen during the course of these burglaries. Now, what we know is the Snap-on hand tools that were stolen was pry bars, spanners and ratchets. They have a distinctive green and black colouring on the grips. And the Milwaukee power tools that were stolen, the hammer drill, the impact wrench, the grinder, the rivet tools and batteries are all red and black in colour. The diagnostic equipment that was stolen is extremely specialised equipment and it can only be used by trained persons in the motor trade. So if anyone has come across these tools for sale, perhaps at a market or online or indeed by any other means, we just ask them to make contact with Gardaí, and they can contact any Garda station, or indeed they can contact the Garda Confidential line, 1800 666.
And anyone who, you know, it's quite possible that someone has come into ownership of these and didn't realise where they originated from. Now, they may be out of money, but at the end of the day, it's very possible they could be connected to these items at some point down the road. So, you know, as I say, if you have these in your possession now and you didn't realise where they came from, it is still now an opportune time to let Gardaí know. But there's further information you have on this investigation as well that might be useful.
That's right, Greg. So as part of our ongoing investigation into these two incidents, we wish to speak to anyone who travelled on the N56 between Donegal Town and Inver between midnight and 2 a.m. on Monday the 12th of August. Now, there was heavy thunder and lightning that night, and hopefully this might jog someone's memory. We're also anxious to speak to the driver of a Toyota Vensis. Now, no further details can be given at this time, but that was in the area of the N56 and the Milltown Bar around 1:20 a.m. on Monday, the 12th of August. We believe that the driver of this car may be in a position to assist us with our investigation. And once again, if anyone can assist us or has indeed any relevant information, perhaps, as you mentioned there, may have bought some power tools or maybe have come into possession of them, we'd ask them to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon this time on 071 98 585 30.
And this is in no way connected to these items. I don't know if they're marked or not, but it is a reminder for us, isn't it, that these crimes can happen into the future, and there are property marking events that on Garda Síochána run often. These types of items can be marked, very useful in if they're ever come across, which the Garda often do, getting them back to their original owners. As I say, unrelated to that appeal, but a good reminder about the importance of marking property.
Absolutely, and we have property marking events, Greg, and I suppose they're advertised on the Garda Facebook page, and also we'll mention them as well on the Community Garda information slot. Or if anyone just wants to contact us, if they have items that they want to get marked, we can make arrangements for that. It doesn't have to be a set event. They can come to the station if it's small items, or indeed, look, if it's a trailer or a larger item, we'll make arrangements to have it marked for them.
Now, an expensive little item missing. It's a DJI Mavic 3 Pro drone. You're looking for the public's help in tracking this down?
Yes. So Gardaí and Milford are appealing this morning for the assistance of the public in their attempts to locate, as you rightly said there, a DJI Mavic 3 Pro drone that was reported as missing from Crowyhead in Dunloe on September 18th. Now, the drone was in a grey carry case along with the controller and batteries. So appeal to anyone who may have information in relation to the current whereabouts of the drone to make contact with Gardaí, or should anyone come across this type of drone for sale on a second-hand basis, we'd ask them maybe if they have it or they see it, if there's a serial number on it, if they can maybe note that, pass that on to Gardaí, or indeed, look, maybe just provide us with the information that they have, you know, been maybe spoken to about the purchase of it, or they know where it is, or that. Look, any information is always, we'll follow up on that. And Gardaí in Milford this time on 91530 60.
All right, now warnings about scam text messages. And I think a lot of people listen to these and go, oh, who'd fall for that? Well, lots of us do. Yeah. Lots of us do. And the purpose of getting the information out here now, I think, is to give people confidence to know it's a scam. Mm-hmm. Because I've got text messages and I've wondered, is it or isn't it? So I really think these information pieces are really valuable. So what's popping up most recently?
I feel like every time I'm in here, we're talking about some sort of a scam.
Well, I've got another one when you'll finish this one.
It's a text message scam again, and it's in circulation, and it purports to be sent, Greg, on behalf of the bank, which in this case, it's Permanent TSB. Now, the text message informs the recipient that an attempt was made to transfer a large amount of money from their account and to make return contact with them if this is not a legitimate transaction. They then provide a phone number to contact them in relation to it. So the text message creates a sense of urgency, and of course that's the intention of the scammers. So what we don't want is for people to call that number back or try and make contact with it. If they receive such a message, we'd ask them obviously to contact their bank, not to click on any links, and don't contact the number provided in the text message. And of course, never disclose your personal or banking information to anyone.
Yeah, and the reason why that you can get caught out, because I had my, I got a text message from my bank, and it says we've just noticed an unusual transaction at a car park in Belfast. If this was you, text back Y. If it was you, if it wasn't you, text back N. So I says, well, listen, that's a scam.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to interact with this. Yeah. And then my card was blocked, which was a pain in the backside. Yeah. So banks do contact us in that way. But you just don't phone numbers or give any personal details and just phone the bank.
And I suppose, look, scams are more getting more sophisticated all the time. You know, so it's just to really be aware and don't click on any links and don't call back any numbers. And if it is a query maybe from your bank and you think it might be legitimate, maybe perhaps just ring the bank directly and establish before you start clicking
on
any links.
And in terms of the scam phone lines, the banks answer very quickly.
Yeah.
I've found, in any case, they have dedicated staff for that. But before you move on, these can be very timely as well. And thanks to Stefan for forwarding on this to me. It's a text message doing the round purporting to be from gov.ie, and it reads, you are eligible for a discounted electricity bill under the emergency benefit scheme. You can apply here, and the URL is ireir-gov-electricity.com. It is a scam. You click onto that and you will be extorted, right? But just with the budget coming up and new payments being announced, someone might fall for that. So I just thought I'd mention that, if that's okay. Right, question from last week. Do both number plates on a car have to be white, and do they have to have the European flag on?
I suppose, Greg, the main requirement for Irish number plates is that the registration number, which consists of the numbers and the letters, must be in black and on a white reflective background. The name of the county of registration must be in Irish, whether that's Dundonald, Balliol, Clea. The EU flag and the letters IRL must be placed on the left-hand side of the plate, and the flag shows 12 gold stars in a circle with the letters IRL in white underneath it all. And that's on a blue reflective background. Now, no other numbers, letters or marks should appear on your registration plate, and vehicle registration plates must be fixed to the front and rear of your vehicle. I suppose, look, from our perspective, it's number plates not conforming front and rear. Sometimes you might see them on cars, particularly around rally time, we would see a lot of it, you know, but that's the requirement, as I've read out there, for the Irish number plates.
Yeah, okay. And it's pretty plain and simple. Greg, why does Letterkenny Garda Station have to get permission from Galway Garda Station to release a Garda car after reporting reckless driving? I reported a reckless driver drifting around the Kiltoy roundabout, but 10 minutes later I had to take a call from Galway. Mm-hmm. By then the car would have been miles away. I presume they've rang the station number here.
Yes, that's correct, Greg. Just to put a bit of background onto it. So in February 2023, a new computer-aided dispatch system known as Garda Safe was introduced as part of a phased rollout to Garda Síochána. Now, this new system is designed to enhance and improve our response and allow more efficient use of our resources. So what this new system means for the public is, now that when they ring their local Garda station and the call requires the dispatch of a Garda resource, such as a patrol car, an unmarked car, ASU, the call will then be transferred to a qualified call taker in the regional call centre in Galway. And this call taker will handle the call and provide the fastest and most suitable Garda response. But how the public would interact with an Garda Síochána, that remains unchanged. They can still contact us at any Garda station. They can visit the Garda Facebook page. They can email us, or indeed in an emergency, 999 or 111. I suppose, look, we came under criticism a number of years ago for there was calls that were perhaps dropped or different things, and this is why the system was introduced. And what it means is there's a regional call centre down in Galway. It has responsibility for the northwestern region, so anywhere from Galway to Louth to Donegal, and they have these maps in Galway. They can see what cars are nearby. So if you
live,
rang in from
they
here,
can see the squad
live,
car
absolutely,
on the screen,
they can zone in to, we'll say, Donegal, for instance. You have a call for here, they'll dispatch the most appropriate resource, and if that is a traffic unit or the, you know, the 101, we would call it, is the car that responds on a daily basis to most of the calls in the area, they'll decide which car is nearest to that and they'll dispatch that. Then they'll get a record of that call, so they'll know the guards are at it when they're at it, and they'll also, so it's really for governance and accountability going forward, that the call has been attended to. And this is the feedback from the call, whether it's cleared or whether there's a response or further action
now,
needs to be taken.
Is it ordinarily, would that call be transferred to Galway?
It has to be, because
this caller talked of a callback. So maybe the line dropped or something and that's why they got a callback from Galway.
I would say probably what happened, Greg, is they rang the station, and once they provided the information that there's a dangerous driving incident at Kiltoy, at that stage then there's resources has to be dispatched. So it's just transferred then to a call taker in Galway. They provide the information then, and the call taker dispatches. So Galway have responsibility for the official vehicles, and they know where they are and they can see them moving on a map, and they decide what car is going to go to that call.
Just in that situation, because it does come up quite a bit, do you call the station or do you you wouldn't call 112 1999 in that. No,
that's
instance.
An emergency. They're yeah. all them numbers.
This,
are
this isn't this, an emergency.
No,
this is a
yeah. You can yeah. still call the Garda station, and as we called out the numbers there for all the different Garda stations, then the guard that receives that call will decide if it's something that requires to be actioned. Just what we're saying, if a car needs to go out, then that has to go to Galway because it's Galway that has control of the vehicles, and they decide what unit they're going to dispatch to the call. You okay. know, it probably sounds, it is, I do it appreciate
kind of
it's
sounds
difficult.
More, it kind of sounds more complicated when it's being explained than yes. perhaps it actually is in, that. I mean, and people have had concerns about it in the past and so on and so forth, but it is what it is, and you've outlined it very well as to how it works. Okay, Garda Sergeant Charlene Anderson, thanks so much for your time as always.
Thank
really
you,
do
Greg.
Appreciate it. Safe journey back to the station. That was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 1st of October. It's back with you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. A caller says, regarding name badges in LUH, staff have no issue with a first name. The full name is no good as staff are being contacted on Facebook. There was no consultation. The staff will face disciplinary action if they're not worn. Staff are fearing for their safety. A first name should suffice. Those in the media have no choice but to be known by their names as they're working in the public eye. It's different for hospital staff. They didn't sign up for this, which also is a very good point. And that's the joy of sitting in this seat, is that you get to hear all different views, and it helps to formulate your own opinion as well. And I'm sure that helps for listeners as well. Excuse me. Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdur Garden Centre is going to join us after 11. It's for the last time of the season. So any questions for Paul, get in touch right now. 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. I'll make sure to get your question to Paul. And I'll give one more mention this hour to our competition we've got running in association with our friends at Green's Shoes. They've got stores in Galway and Limerick, closer to home, Falkara and Letterkenny, but wherever you are online, greensshoes.com. Up for grabs today, it's a pair of Rikers. And I'm going to give you the opening line of a song. I just want the title of the song, Your Name and Where You're From, to 086 60 25000. And the opening line is, I come home in the morning light. What song's that? Text the answer, your name and where you're from, to 086 60 25000, or WhatsApp if you prefer. The choice, quite literally, is yours. Right, let me now go to our next guest on the programme, and that person is Caroline O'Doherty, who's environment correspondent with the Irish Independent. Caroline, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Right, so some stark potential here in this story. It's new proposed laws that could give local authorities search and seize powers, this to crack down on smoky fuels. So who's talking about this, and at what stage is it in terms of, I suppose, a potential introduction, Caroline?
Well, those who are talking about it are the local authorities themselves. They are in charge of enforcing the smoky fuels ban. And I put slightly ban in the slightly inverted commas because there are exemptions to it. But it's supposed to have been in place for the last 2 years, meaning you should only have really low smoke coal, very little turf, if any at all, and you know, well-dry timber in your open fire, if that's how you're heating your house. But in the 2 winters since it was introduced, there's persistent air pollution problems in particular areas, and not everywhere is monitored, so it could be far broader than that. Letterkenny would be one town where there are issues. So something doesn't add up there. If it's meant to be low smoke varieties, but there's still more pollution in the air, particularly on the cold, still days when there isn't wind to blow the evidence away, if you like. So something's not happening. The local authorities are the ones who are supposed to enforce this ban. What they've been doing to date is kind of fairly routine checks on retailers. Now, these would be very visible companies and outlets in towns, you know, your local reliable fuel merchant. So they're very visible. So, you know, and they're coming up compliant generally. It was a tiny few exceptions, not in Donegal, but some other councils. A few exceptions where they found maybe the fuels were not coming up to the standards they were supposed to meet. But so what's the issue then? There is obviously an issue of sort of informal sales going on, or maybe people are bringing fuels from over the border or something. But what the councils have said is, look, we need more enforcement tools. They've gone to the Department of Environment and said, you know, give us a stronger hand. And the Department has come back and produced this piece of draft legislation, which is quite strong mm-hmm. and potentially does give them a lot of powers. So I can go into those if you like, but I'm going to say this with a word of warning. Like, we are in the dying months and possibly weeks, to some commentators say, of the government. So any new piece of legislation brought before the House now, it has kind of limited chances of becoming law under this government. But it, you know, the issues that are being raised by the councils won't go away.
And that being said, so Caroline, before you run that, I think any government, whichever government is next in power, this is the type of decision they probably would actually try to make really quite early in the term, so that everyone's forgotten about it by the time the next election rolls around. So whilst we might not see it in the lifetime of this government, if the councils are listened to and this is enforced, I don't think they'll hang around and introduce it, whoever is in power.
I think there's some astute political analysis there, actually. Yeah, I think you're right. Because, you know, the tone of it, when you look at the bare legislation, you're going to go, oh, my goodness, that gives them a very strong hand. And potentially, I mean, you know, there is this, councils do have powers to actually go into someone's house, but they have to give them notice and have to have reason to go in. So if, for example, they suspected someone was maybe selling, you know, bags of turf, or, you know, they have a field where they cut down a load of timber and the next week they're selling it, you know, out the back door or out the back garden. Or if there's a persistent problem with a householder who's, you know, who's raining down smoke on their neighbours, especially in a built-up area, they do have the powers to go in, but they have to give them at least 24 hours notice, and you have to have good reason. And look, if you're trying to hide something, you'll hide something in 24 hours. Under the proposed new bill, they would have powers to go in if they can prove that, or if they have really good grounds to show that, look, they suspect there is a major breach of the regulations going on, and if they don't go in sort of unannounced, you know, the evidence will be hidden. Now, look, again, there is an issue with just resources for doing this kind of enforcement work. We know the local authorities struggle to do all sorts of environmental enforcement, you know, be it inspecting septic tanks. They, you know, they do so few in a year. Other water quality issues, you know, noise pollution, all that kind of thing. They're not particularly tooled up. They're tooled up to some degree under the law. They're obviously tooled up in terms of just human resources for going out and doing this. So it is there's that issue as well, you know, actually putting people on the case, if you like, of these kind of, there's an issue there as well. But I suppose the first part is the law is in place. If you can put the enforcement tools, at least on paper, in place, and the next stage is getting that enforcement, you know, exercises and operations going, if you like. Because believe it or not, local authorities are now also responsible for the likes of the deposit return scheme, and, you know, looking at supermarkets and making sure that they're not selling bottles that don't have the deposit return scheme label on them. So their remit is quite broad and getting broader on the environmental front. I'm not always sure that the resources they get to match that remit, that widening remit, are put in place.
Yeah, and I think because some of the concern about air quality is quite localised, I could find, you can imagine local authorities don't want to be the outlier or the laggard, and maybe where there are issues, they want to have the powers to sort of maybe catch up with other areas that aren't having the same problems they might have. But in real terms, what does this mean? Theoretically, if I have a neighbour, say I've got chest complaint, I have a neighbour and it's evident there's smoke coming out of their chimney, dark smoke every single day. Theoretically, could I report that under this legislation to the council, and the council could go in, or whomever might be responsible, go in and determine, you know, whether or not they're burning illegal fuels, in inverted commas, and if so, confiscate that fuel?
Well, essentially, yes. And you know, you've always been entitled to make that report under the Air Pollution Act, which goes back to the 1980s, under kind of a nuisance kind of clause, if you like. My neighbour is causing me a nuisance. It's you know, it's a very mild way of putting it. If you're somebody who maybe has a chronic chest infection, yeah, and you literally can't go out the door because of what your neighbours are doing. Yes, you could do that. Yes, the council can make that decision to go in. I suspect they would do the old way first, which is give the householder notice and say, look, we want to come in and talk to you about this. Here's the powers that we have to do that. I suspect if they didn't get much joy there and the problem persisted, then they might, you know, be under pressure both from the complainant household and, say, the wider kind of regulatory kind of responsibility that they have, to maybe, you know, use this new provision, if they get it in the law, to actually just go in and say, look, we need to see what you're burning. Show us your fuel store at the back. Show us what's in your grate, and let's do some work on that. Now, look, it's a sensitive one. It's a sensitive one. For any neighbour making a complaint against another neighbour is just fraught, and people really don't want to do that, you know, which is why they turn to the authorities and say, you know, could you, you know, can you look after this? this is in your hands. So, you know, I think there may be some pressure from, you know, ordinary householders to say, yes, we would love it, actually, if our local authority was more proactive, because it puts a lot on a person in a household to try and make a complaint against the neighbour. I think there are certain people. There are people who feel, look, the only thing I can afford is the wet bit of timber that my cousin, you know, has in his field because he cuts down fallen trees now and again. Those are sensitive issues as well.
But just in relation to that, what is the situation, Caroline, in terms of selling wood for burning? Is that legal, illegal? I know. I think I have a fair idea what the situation is with turf, yeah, but what's the story there?
Yeah. Well, the turf is odd as well, and it's kind of grey and hazy the way it's worded. Now, you are allowed to sell timber, but it has to be, the moisture content has to be very low, so it's supposed to be dried. So it's supposed to be either, you know, left out in drying conditions for a long time, or it's, you know, you will see ads for kiln dried, you know, timber. So somebody who's routinely providing timber and logs, and they have a kiln to dry it. Again, like, you know, I mean, I think instinctively we all know if you got a bag of logs and threw them in, you'd know very quickly when they're wet and they don't burn well, and there's awful smoke and so on. I suppose the scientific side of that, if a council was to try and prove it, they would actually have to do some tests on it. So it's not straightforward as such. There's still a lot to it if you were to actually take an enforcement.
But you also then have to be found to be burning it, because you could argue, look, it's sitting there waiting to dry. This, the other dry stuff I have, you know, so that's complicated. I can see where it's a problem there. But, you know, by having laws in place, certain people will just abide by them anyway. And just turf, what's the story with turf? I mean, turf, obviously, this is where it gets quite political, because in areas like Donegal, you know, we've a lot of poverty. A lot of people struggle to heat their home. Turf is the way they do it. It can be cheap. It can be affordable. I think the practice of cutting turf is naturally dying out. But still, a lot of it goes on. So currently, you can cut and burn your own turf, but you can't advertise or you can't sell it. And do you see any advances in the limitations of its use going forward, Caroline?
As the cutting... you know, sort of dwindles, you know, that will be eventually what sort of, I suppose, you know, causes the ultimate phase out of turf, but it is still in circulation. You're right, you're not supposed to sell it, you know, publicly advertise it, all of that. It can exchange hands with those who have traditional turf cutting rights. So, I mean, obviously that's, you know, that's rife for it's kind of an elastic definition. And I think it's still possible to find small ads here and there. If you look closely, people selling turf, it's not just going to their friends or family or community, and it's not going free. You know, it's there are sales going on. So there's still a bit of work to be done on that. And there is still anecdotal evidence, and more than anecdotal, actually. The Environmental Protection Agency has some enforcement proceedings, you know, against people who are cutting fairly large amounts of turf. So it's not just that, you know, sort of family, community, neighbourhood use. It is broader than that. So it is going on, but I think it is going to gradually dwindle.
I think really where people might feel this up here mostly is, you know, checkpoints and being found with you know, home heating oil or particularly coal or what have you in the boot of the car from the north. But we'll see. Caroline, thanks so much for your time and outlining that for us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Take care of yourself. Caroline O'Doherty, Environment Correspondent with the Irish Independent. And we outlined at the beginning of that interview the likelihood of that happening and when it might happen. Bin emptying prices have gone up, says the listener. So people are burning everything and anything in sight in those wood burners. Chemical smells, I've noted on several occasions. By the way, in relation to a caller we had on the show last week where their bin wasn't being collected, that situation has been resolved. So fair play to the resident or residents and the bin company as well, who have worked with their clients, and their bin was lifted. So hopefully that's the way it is going forward. What is through smokeless coal? We know that there are chemicals in through it. I'm not really quite sure what's in smokeless coal. Some of it's produced relatively locally, I think, so it wouldn't be hard to find out. Name badges at Letterkenny University Hospital. All the staff should stand together and wear their old name badges. They can't sack everyone. No name, please. Of course, yeah, I get you. It's all staff at the hospital are doing their job in the manner which they're employed to do. What is the issue? I think it's a great idea. At the moment, I think it's about 70-30 in favour of the name badges. But the majority of those in favour seem to be the public. The majority of those opposed to it are those who work there who probably are sick of getting messages on social media or what have you. Councillor Michael McLafferty joins me on the show now. Michael, thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Morning, listeners. Thank you.
We were talking a little earlier on about XL bullies and a victim of a dog attack. Her sister says the current legislation or rules being introduced do not go far enough. What do you think?
I would say, Greg, at the minute, I would have to agree with the sister. They don't go far enough as such. And the same that we went back the clock, Greg, we'll go back maybe 30 years ago that you or I are clearly remembering Caroline there. For example, that time in England, you would have put on the television in the morning or the radio, whichever your choice at the time. And particularly that time, if you clearly recall, Greg, we went through an unfortunate spate, particularly around England, Scotland, so on like that, where a lot of children, school children, and indeed some adults as well, got attacked. And normally it was the likes of these dogs at the time. Actually, it was pit bulls and Rottweilers. More so Rottweilers was mentioned at the time. And it just seems to be a bit like now, for me, rewinding the clock or putting the clock forward 30 years later, we seem to be experiencing the same type of situation scenario that they had over there 30 years ago now here in Ireland. And the reason seems to be we're experiencing, we seem to have a lot more of these dogs here in Ireland now that weren't really on our shores as such maybe 25, 30 years ago, to be fair. And now all these things are happening. Like I was saying as well there early in the morning, there as well, Greg Shannon there. These types of dogs, let it be XL bullies, let it be pit bulls, let it be Dobermans, let it be Rottweilers, or even your average Border Collie as such, they need a lot of exercise, a lot of stimulation, and they're not really designed or built or bred either, in fact, for staying in lakes of towns or maybe villages even, or concrete jungles and such, where they're very, very limited to what they can do. They get bored, obviously. They get crabbed, then they get cross. Obviously, what has happened here, these dogs have turned, sadly, on their owners and killed the poor owners. There's been numerous incidents now, Greg.
Well, I mean, obviously the government agrees with you, and they are saying if you currently own one, you can keep it. It has to be neutered. It has to have a license. Mm. It has to be chipped. But you can't sell it, you can't breed it, and you can't actually even rehome them. So the government agrees with you to a certain extent, but some people believe that does not go far enough. So do you believe that these XL bullies now should be rounded up and put down? Because that's the only thing that's left to do.
That's the only thing that's left to do, Greg. To be fair, it's a difficult one, all right, because I know some people say they're lovely pets and whatnot, and they're friendly and everything else, and they probably are friendly to a certain degree. I think it's one to be fair. I think our dog warrants would need to heavily get involved here. I think the licensing, whoever has one, the licenses would need to be looked at. There would need to be some sort of checks done, and then possibly following on from that, then maybe rounding up then, all right, possibly.
Yeah, because as it stands, the government's plans are to effectively, this is the last generation of XL bullies in legal public ownership. So the only thing to do is let them live out their natural lives and accept that risk. Or if you are incredibly concerned, I'm certainly not advocating this, is, as I say, to round them up and put them down. But you wouldn't go that far, or you would go that far. I'm not quite sure what your position is there.
It's a difficult one, Greg, but I think, to be fair as well, I think it comes down as well to the ownership of the dog as well. As well as ownership of the dog, is the dog actually suited to the environment that he's in as such as she's in?
Yeah, but we don't do that, though. We don't do that for any dogs. I mean, I believe if we're going down that route, you could do that for absolutely any dog, couldn't you?
Well, you could, Greg, in fairness, but every dog's not a killer as such, to what respect, Every dog's not going to turn on you and kill you as such. Right. I mean, your Chihuahua, your Terrier, your Yorkshire Terrier as such, it's not going to turn on you and kill you. These are serious killer dogs. These dogs in other worlds as such are trained for fighting. They're thrown onto pits to fight, which I'm totally, totally against. It's horrible what happens to them for gain, bettings and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on here, and I think just now the situation we have here at the moment, we have possibly an explosion of dogs that are not suited to our environment here in our Irish shores. That's what I really feel here at the minute. And it's no disrespect to anybody who has one of them, but they are very dangerous. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. Right. You only need to look at the news.
So any dogs then on the dangerous dog list, do you believe that there should be inspections, review of the owners of those dogs? Is that what you're saying as well?
I do believe so, Greg. Yes, a review of the dogs particularly, yes. Not the owners, not the owners themselves. A review of the dogs.
What does that mean? I don't understand.
A review of the situation where they,
yeah, so
well, a review of where they are. Like, I'm not getting at the owner, obviously.
Yeah,
but the dog in question is.
I think you're riding two horses here. You're trying to say one thing, but you're also not trying to offend anyone, and that's not how it works, really. If you're concerned about dangerous dogs, and you're talking about going in and investigating the space that ex-bullies are in, and to see if it's safe and if they should be removed on an individual basis, they're on the dangerous dogs list. So presumably, then you believe that should be extended to Dobermans, to all the other dogs that you mentioned at the start of the interview?
Yes, but the particular ones that pose the most risk, yes, Greg.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, like, for example, you wouldn't have a Doberman or something in the middle of Lehigh Town or such, like, unless you really had a place for it, or Fulcara Street or something else, like, because of the risk it would pose, like. So, I mean, there is a big common sense factor here as well, like.
Okay.
These dogs, in my view anyway, are more suited to out in the countryside where there are plenty of a scope, maybe a field or something to run around in, or a safe enclosure where they can't get out, they can't go with people. You have plenty of room to walk them as you wish, exercise and this kind of stuff. But whereas they're cooped up, then they're in a jail type situation as such, and over time then they just basically crack up. That's what seems to be happening here. These dogs are cracking up, Greg, and that is the reality here.
Right.
Let them be closed in or chained up in the front or back yard. But unfortunately then, for the people involved then over the last while, we have a crack-up situation then, and the dog was crazy. And it's all over and done with then, a serious situation then, before the dog's dealt with.
All right, OK. Yep, I get you. That's your view. I appreciate it. OK, thank you very much for your time today. That's Councillor Michael McLafferty. Do you agree or disagree? Let me know.